But as long as he rules a mage, he has that mage's power, said Wad, who was. And when he takes possession of you, said Kawab, he will be master of all. Because only those who obey him will be permitted to use any great gates, and all others will therefore be weaker than he is. He will rule both worlds, passing back and forth between them. He will summon 10,000, 100,000 Sudahites to Westel, and take possession of all the mages there on that world where few have strength enough to resist them. For humans here on Middlegard have developed strength in the ape brain to resist possession. Those who have this strength are far more likely to have children than those who are easily possessed. On Mitherholm, there is no resistance. All the power of all the Mither mages will be in Set's hands, through the Sutahites who will be unable to resist his will. Then they will return to Earth and conquer all. When that work is complete, they will challenge Duat. But even if that fails, they will still have this. Possession of all the bodies that were reserved for the Khan Ba who obeyed the law and fought against Set in the war in Duat. Is that not a victory? Is that not the triumph of the devil? Those words rang in the ears, in the mind of Wad, that is. He would have leapt to his feet, finally understanding what he had forgotten during his centuries in the tree. But Danny North had not seen with such clarity, because of course he had no personal memories of the interview with Kawab. And so he started it over, every word of it again and again. And Wad lay trapped on the meadow in Mithercame, while Danny sat dehydrating in the desert of Egypt, replaying the same memory over and over, struggling to understand it. Then, at last, it ended. Hermia wakened Danny North in Egypt, and Wad's eyes flew open and he cried out in relief to have his mind finally clear of the memory. "Who held you?" demanded Anonoe.
"When did you come here?" asked Wad. "You weren't here."
"You lay here unmoving an entire night and then a day. Sed came for me through a gate you left for me to use, and we came back by another gate you left for me."
Wad remembered now that Anonoe had been visiting one of her toadies who was working against Bexoy in the castle of Nasasa. He had sent her through a gate and had already made the gate that would bring her back. He had made them overlap perfectly so that it remained public for her to use for her return. That way he didn't have to watch and bring her back herself. He was tired of watching her flirt with men and turn them into jelly. But a public gate is public in both directions, unless Wad locked it, which he hadn't. Sed must have noticed where Anonoe stepped through from this meadow. And when Wad fell into the trance of memory, what had Danny North learned? Would it be good or bad if he understood? It was certainly good that Wad now understood completely what once he had guessed at. For now he remembered how he had gone at once to the beast mage he had failed to save. Only she fell to her knees before him this time, instead of mocking.
"Thank you, Loki," she cried out as soon as he appeared. "You saved me."
"I did not save you," Wad had said.
"But he's gone," she said.
"Gone, but of his own free will. Not cast out by my power. He simply didn't want me to find him."
That was a good sign. That meant that the Bellmage, Set, to use Kawab's name for him, still feared Wad enough to want to avoid him. Set had given the Beast Mage back to herself so that Wad would not know where to find him. It was in that moment that Wad began to eat the gates. It took him a little while to figure out how to do it, but hadn't Kawab told him it was possible? And it worked. Wad ate all the gates. All the great gates but one. Then he passed through it, ate it behind him, then ate all the gates on Westel. But it was not enough. The other gate mages saw what was happening,
felt their own gates consumed and immediately began to create new gates where the old ones had been. It was not enough to eat the maid gates. He had to reach into the other mages and eat the gates they had not yet made. It took him days to learn how to do it, and during that time he could hardly sleep because he knew that the other gate mages were searching for him. They could find him because he was holding their gates captive. He had to block them by eating every gate as soon as it was made. That was when he trained his outself, his Ba, to watch for any gate at all and cry out to him with strength enough to waken him from his exhausted sleep. "Gate, gate, gate," they cried, and he awoke and ate whatever gates the mages searching for him had created. Until at last he was able to reach inside them, find their gate hoard, their Ba, and gather it all in. The more they resisted, the easier it was to snap off the connection. All the gates they would ever make, and he took them and held them, ruling over them, controlling them. And then there were no gates left in the world, and no gate mages left to make new ones. Only then did Wad go in search of the ancient tree mage, now long dead, though this one who was training said was a disciple of a disciple of, who got a tree to let him inside its bark, to feed on its sap and keep both himself and the tree vibrant and alive forever. Forever. That had been the plan. But the tree expelled him. Or he unconsciously pulled himself out of the tree. Or both. And Wad had no idea why. The system had been working, and now it was broken. It was broken because he, or the tree, or space-time, knew that Wad had no power to resist or control Danny North, let alone steal from him. It had to happen, Wad supposed. If there were two mages, one would be greater than the other, and given time enough, you could find a third who was greater still. Powerful as Wad was, there was bound to come another eventually who was stronger than he was. One whose gates could not be eaten. "Please talk to me," Anonoe asked. Whether it was because he was dying to talk to someone about all that he had just remembered, or whether she used her man-magery to cajole him or control him into telling, he told her all of it. "You saved the world," she said. "And Danny North has it in his power to unsave it. Now there is an open gate, and if the dragon, Set, can find someone, some mage, to ride through it, he'll be here, along with as many wanderers as he can bring, and this world is lost."
"I can see how you'd think that was a bad thing," said Anonoe.
"You think it isn't?" demanded Wad.
"I was being ironic," said Anonoe. "It's the worst thing that could happen. All the power of all the Mither Mages under the rule of a monster? I'm against that."
"I'm glad to hear it."
Said and the Tree Mage had listened to all of Wad's account. But now the Tree Mage said,
"Time to return to work, Said."
"But after hearing all of this, how can I concentrate?" asked Said.
"It is precisely at such times that you must have the power to concentrate. So now you'll make a whirlwind small enough to use a single grain of sand to bore through a block of wood, a hole that is only one sand grain in diameter."
"Impossible," said Said.
"Two sand grains, then," said the Tree Mage. "The single grain tunnel will be tomorrow."
They went back to work.
Anonoe had only one question for Wad. "These Sutahites, these Bell Mages, are they man-mages, then?"
"No," said Wad.
"But they work in the same way. What my outself does, reaching into a person, persuading him, that's what they do, only using their whole Ka?"
"They can't separate Ka from Ba, or so Kawab said."
"Why can't you just say yes or no?"
"Because I don't understand all the ramifications of the things Kawab told me. He wasn't, a mage himself, so he doesn't even know the ramifications. its lore that he learned and memorized and then intended to pass on. To other disciples of the Order, but they were being persecuted at the time, so there were no others. They had been killed or had fled, or had obeyed when Kawab commanded them to go into hiding. There was no one left to teach.
Only you, said Anonoe. But you were enough.
For 1600 years or so, said Wad. Until now.
And now?
Set is surely still alive somewhere, waiting for a chance to get control of Danny North.
If he can, said Anonoe.
Danny is a strong-willed boy, said Wad. Stronger than me. So maybe he can resist, as long as he doesn't do something stupid like inviting Set in.
What form could such an invitation take? Asked Anonoe. Now that his memory had been awakened, Wad could think back to the lore of possession that, as a gate mage, he had been required to learn.
Words, of course. Calling the bell mage by name, if they have names. Maybe the name didn't matter, just the fact of calling.
And no other way?
A bell mage could jump from one person to another if they had some kind of physical intercourse.
Sex.
Or a deep kiss. Or a common flow of blood. Two wounds pressed together. There were some people so weak-willed that a bell mage could jump between them with only a steady gaze connecting them. But few mither mages are so weak as that.
That's how it is with me, said Anonoe. A weak person. My voice alone is enough. A little stronger, and I have to have them in gaze before I can send my out-self into them and turn them to my will. If I'm going to ride them like a heart beast, well, before passing through the Great Gate, I didn't have the power to do that. And even now, I can't do it without consent. Without the kiss.
Wad understood the hesitation. It wasn't kissing she had used. She had doubtless slept with several of her toadies in order to be able to ride them as heart beasts. So you're saying that they are like man-mages, said Wad.
Or man-mages are like Sutahites?
Like Set, like the devil and his angels. Yes, like that.
No wonder everybody fears and hates us, said Anonoe.
Including me, said Wad. Not hate, but fear. I always wonder if you've used your magery on me.
Not deliberately, said Anonoe. I've never sent anything into you. But I do this by reflex. I'm sure that I've probably had some influence I wasn't even aware of. But never enough to control you. Your choices have been your own.
So the powerful desire I have to sleep with you, said Wad, that's not of your making?
I think it has more to do with... What did Kawab say? The ape woman that I'm riding in.
In other words, I just think you're pretty, said Wad.
You're male and I'm female, said Anonoe. You think any willing female is pretty?
You're willing?
In answer, she kissed him.
But is it safe for me to sleep with you?
He asked her, when the kiss was over. Doesn't that depend on how strong your own will is? She asked.
It's a foolish thing to do right now, said Wad.
You're right, she said. But what if we gate somewhere that Sed and his teacher can't see us?
That sounded good to Wad, and so he moved the end of the gate she had just used, so now it led to a room in Nasasa, a locked room, with a bed. After all, I've slept with a queen, thought Wad. Why not with a king's ex-concubine? Vaguely, he thought, shouldn't I have the strength of will to resist this desire?
Clearly, he answered himself, it is my will to have this woman right now. And she's willing. So shut up.
Chapter 19. Treachery. This is high school, Danny reminded himself. This is what you wanted. Supposedly, he was helping Lorette study for a pre-calculus test that was coming up. Danny thought of calculus as a game, sometimes tedious but usually enjoyable. To Lorette, however, it was a perpetual mystery. Danny explained in words that he knew were clear. He demonstrated over and over. Lorette concentrated hard, echoing his words, even tracing the operations he performed, yet she still didn't really understand it. Once she got an answer right, but instead of being thrilled or relieved, she almost wept in frustration. "I don't know what I did," she said. "You did the operation and entered all the right numbers in the calculator, and I didn't do any of it. You got it right." "But why did I get it right? I thought I did all those things with all the other problems that I screwed up." "Lorette, are you planning any kind of career that's going to need math?" "I just don't like being stupid," she said. And then she did weep. "You're not stupid," he said. "You're just not interested in math." He put his arm across her shoulders. She melted into him, weeping onto his shirt. "I'm interested in A's," she said. "That's always been enough before." And then he realized that instead of just clinging to him, she was stroking his chest. And that's when he decided that he hated high school. Nothing was ever what it seemed to be. Lorette seemed genuinely frustrated by her math class, and yet here she was, turning it into something romantic. So how much of her crying was real? How could he know? They're all man-mages, girls are. Every damn one of them. Not Pat. Give her credit. She played no games. But she also didn't need any help with her homework. Danny took Lorette's hands in the brotherly way and set them on the table. "You just need to do it again. On the next problem. I'll watch. Do the steps. You can get it right every time, Lorette. Just concentrate on the operations, not the numbers you're plugging in." "I know you like Pat," said Lorette, "but I just don't see why." "Fortunately," said Danny, "you don't have to." He got up from the table and headed for the refrigerator. "Is there anything off limits in the fridge?" "Everything in the fridge is off limits," said Lorette. "My mom micromenus. She calculates the family diet down to the microgram." "So doubtful," said Danny. "You don't own a scale that reports micrograms." "You can eat anything from the cookie jar," said Lorette. "But your mother's vegan wheatless cookies are inedible," said Danny. "None of you has a gluten allergy." "She read somewhere that wheat is bad. It's just a phase. She's probably already sneaking bread herself on the sly. Then she'll feel guilty, confess to us all, and we'll get bread again, too." "It's amazing that your whole family doesn't look like concentration camp victims." "We all cheat," said Lorette. "Though in my case, it's not for flavor or even hunger. It's all about keeping the cleavage." "Yes, well," said Danny. "You never look anymore."
"Don't have to keep reading a book I've already memorized. Wasn't Sin coming over, too?"
"No," said Lorette.
"She said she was."
"It's my turn tonight," said Lorette.
"I hate high school," said Danny.
"I don't want to have sex with you," said Lorette. "I just want you to be interested in it. I know you're not gay because of what Pat said."
Danny's heart sank a little. "What did Pat say?"
"I asked her, what was it like to kiss him?
And she said, I wonder whether we're really going to Grandma's for Thanksgiving or if my parents are going to call it off again this year." "Oh," said Danny.
"And then I said, so you slept with him, is that it? And she said, my parents always have these big plans, but then they don't do any of the jobs you have to do to make the plans come off."
"Her parents are very frustrating to her," said Danny. "But I think if procrastination bordering on laziness is the worst thing wrong with your parents, you're doing pretty well."
"I don't actually care about Pat's parents, Danny," said Lorette. "Boys are supposed to be constant horn dogs, and mythological gods are supposed to be even worse."
"Some of them are," said Danny. "Maybe most of them."
"Maybe you are, too. If you find girls you think are attractive..."
She was crying again.
"What is this?" asked Danny. "We're friends. You're attractive and funny and nice, and I like you fine. But you don't want me."
"Is that the only measure of anything?" asked Danny. "And you need to get your homework done, so I'm leaving."
"Please don't," said Lorette. "Please just Can't you just kiss me and see if you like it? I'd like it just fine. I'd like it a lot. That's why I'm not going to do it.
You can't possibly be Christian, said Lorette. Why can't you ever do something because it's fun?
I do things for fun all the time, said Danny. But I don't like hurting people.
Pat doesn't own you. You're not married.
Actually, I lied. I do like hurting people. I spent my whole childhood thinking up malicious pranks and playing them. Really nasty stuff, involving poo and pain and bad smells and minor injuries, plus a lot of humiliation. But that's because I detested everyone in my family, and they detested me back. And my pranks were funny. There's nothing funny about kissing you when I don't mean it, and when I know you'd talk about it, and it would hurt Pat, and it would also hurt Xena and Sin, because I didn't do anything with them.
What if I didn't talk about it? Asked Lorette.
I'm going now, said Danny.
You said that before, and yet you're still here.
She got up from her chair and put her arms around him and leaned her head on his chest.
You really are physically fit, you know. Good health is so attractive.
Now you're just being idiotic, said Danny.
And you're still here, said Lorette.
She slid a hand down his back, under the waistband of his pants.
All that's down there is my butt, said Danny.
You have one, too. She used her other hand to grab his wrist and plant his hand on her backside.
That's a butt, she said. And you don't have one. That's what I'm looking for, to see what holds your pants up.
This had gone far enough, because it wasn't working exactly as she intended, and he just didn't understand why she was doing this. It seemed like a game among the girls, but they also seemed to mean it. He gated back 3 paces. She burst into tears.
I'm that repulsive.
The opposite. You won't leave me alone, and you are not repulsive, and I'm grimly determined not to be that guy.
What guy?
The guy who thinks he's a god and impregnates women left and right.
I'm on the pill, if that's what worries you. And I know you don't have AIDS, so you don't have to use a condom.
I can't believe you said that, said Danny.
She was back in front of him, fiddling with a zipper.
What happened to no means no, he said, removing her hands from his jeans.
That's so 80s, she said. I wasn't even born then, and it's about girls saying no anyway.
But he had no snappy retort, because in that moment he felt something that could not be real. He felt somebody using the wild gate. He knew it was that gate because there were a dozen of his own gates woven into it in one direction, 2 dozen in the other, so the feeling of gate use was that much stronger. Hermia and Vivi used gates often, and he knew what that felt like. It was part of the background noise of his life, though it was far more noticeable now, since he'd been through a great gate himself. This, though, this was someone he didn't know. And then another person. And another.
Excuse me, said Danny. Something's happening. Nothing to do with you. Gotta go.
What's wrong? You look... But he didn't get to hear how he looked. He had already gated to Silverman's barn. There was no one there. There was also no wild gate. Someone had moved it. And he hadn't even felt it. No, he had felt it. That's part of what drew his attention to the use of the gate. Someone moved it. And then people started using it. Someone? There were only 2 gate mages in the world besides Danny, unless it was the Westillian kid that Loki had dropped off with the Silvermans. Danny gated to the house. The boys were sitting in the living room. The younger one was playing a video game. The older one was staring into space. Both here, nothing changed.
Danny, said Leslie.
She stood in the doorway that led to the hall.
What's wrong?
Somebody's using the gate. He didn't need to specify which one.
No,
said Leslie.
Nobody's come in here.
Somebody moved this end of the gate, said Danny. It's not in the barn anymore.
Hermia, said Leslie.
I didn't know she could do it, said Danny. But who else? Vivi?
What are you going to do?
She's already sending people through, her family no doubt. So much for my 2 from each family rule.
You realize that you have no time at all, said Leslie.
Without the advantage of having been through a great gate when they haven't, Marion and I aren't such great shakes as mages. They'll blow us away.
I suppose you're right. They wouldn't be doing it this way if they had peaceful intentions.
I can't believe she did this.
She thought she could get away from those family ties, and she was wrong, said Leslie.
You can talk to her about it later. Right now, what are you going to do?
I've got to get you and Dad and these boys somewhere safe. Leslie nodded, and there were tears on her cheeks.
I'll get Marion in from the quarry.
No, said Danny, I will. He walked to the boys on the couch and peeled the headphones off Enop's head. Take my hand, he said. Enop did, then took Eliuik's hand. Danny reached for Leslie, and as soon as they gripped each other, he gated them all to the pit at the north end of the farm where Marion quarried simple granite from the bedrock. The pit wasn't deep. He quarried by sending his outself deep and drawing up the stone, floating it to the surface. The pit was just so the neighbors and passing cars couldn't see the stones rise through the soil without the aid of human hands. Marion grasped the situation as soon as Danny said, Hermia moved the gate and she's using it. He gated them to Vivi's condo. Vivi wasn't there. She's at the beach, said Danny. I'll be right back. And in a moment he was. Vivi was dripping and furious.
I can't believe that little Greek bitch would betray us all like that.
Family, said Leslie.
That doesn't excuse being a traitorous bitch, said Vivi.
But it explains it, said Marion. Besides which, I think the way they see it is she's finally stopped being a traitorous bitch, and now she's a loyal family member again.
Or they held her dog hostage, said Leslie. What's happening? Asked Enop.
Join hands, and at the next place they'll explain it to you, said Danny. He took them to D.C., to Stone's house. Hermia's been sending people through the wild gate. Turns out that passing to Westall and back gave her the power to move other people's gates, specifically the middle guard end of the wild gate.
And you didn't stop her?
I didn't know what I was feeling until she was already sending people through, said Danny. I didn't know you could move a great gate.
Stone bowed his head.
Have you gathered up all the gates she knows about?
All of hers, all the ones that connect our houses.
That was practically a reflex, like clenching your sphincter muscles when you're scared, said Danny.
What an ill-raised child you are, Danny, said Leslie. We don't talk about sphincter muscles in front of impressionable children.
They're going to attack all the other families, said Danny. Mine first, I'm sure. But at this point, the only thing I can do is make a great gate and send everybody through, or the Illyrians will kill everybody else and rule the world. Am I not right?
Oh, if history teaches us anything, said Stone, it's that gods with a sudden increase in power instantly remember how much they hate their enemies.
We're all so good at grudges, said Leslie.
What are you going to do to Hermia? Asked Marion.
Nothing yet, said Danny.
Unless she forces me.
Where do you want to go?
Hermia doesn't know about my place in Maine, said Stone.
Neither did I, said Vivi.
Stone ignored her. There isn't even running water, but it's between two very cold lakes, clean water, plenty of firewood, and an outhouse. These boys aren't used to indoor plumbing anyway, am I right?
I am, said Vivi.
Leslie smiled sweetly.
Does a mage poop in the woods?
I think so.
Any mages in residence here? Asked Danny.
I'll call them, said Stone.
There were three, all women, one in her 50s and a pair of 20-year-old twins. No time for introductions. Danny made a public gate, made it open and obvious, and they all passed through. Danny didn't go with them. They'd all get acquainted at the lake, and Danny would join them later. He took back the gate and then headed for the North family compound. He arrived in Mook's and Lummy's kitchen. They weren't there. He found them on the front porch.
Bring everybody, he said.
What is it? Said Aunt Lummy, looking scared.
The Greeks got into a great gate that I thought was safe. They're passing through it now, and you know they'll come here first.
Uncle Mook was already running to the old house.
I'm taking us all to a safe place, said Danny.
How long do you think we can hide from them? Asked Lummy.
Long enough for me to make a great gate and pass you all through it.
She burst into tears and embraced him.
I knew you'd forgive us.
You and Uncle Mook never did anything that needed forgiving, said Danny. And I haven't forgiven anybody. I'm just not going to let the Greeks rule the world.
It was that Greek girl, wasn't it? Asked Aunt Lummy. You can't trust a Greek. Homer said so, and he was right.
It was Laocoon who said it. Homer was just quoting him, said Danny.
Actually, what Laocoon said wasn't printable. Homer cleaned it up for him, said Lummy.
The bell was ringing. It was never rung except when there was war. Danny took Lummy's hand and gated to the gathering place.
You! Shouted Great Uncle Zog, looking furious. Danny gated him to the kitchen of the big house.
I don't have time for any shit, he said. I was betrayed, and the Greeks are going to Westall and back right now.
All the adults knew what that meant, and they kept the children silent.
I'm gating you to a place where I can make a great gate, but I'm telling you right now, I'm letting everybody use it, not just the North family. Anybody has a problem with that, then that's a person who isn't going through. Is that clear?
What do you mean by everybody? Asked Auntie Uck.
I'm not disagreeing. I just want to know.
Everybody who isn't Greek, said Danny. Families and orphans, and there's a truce at the new great gate. Do you understand me? A total truce. As soon as I make the gate, Hermia will know where it is and they'll head for it.
Then as soon as we get through it, we'll head for them, said Grandpa Gish.
He actually looked happy, thrilled even. Also evil. Definitely he looked evil. Danny remembered why he hated some of these people.
You've never been through a great gate, said Danny. It takes time to figure out what you can do, so no, I'm not sending you off to war. I'm going to gate off anyone who approaches. I can do it. When they see that everybody else has gone through a great gate too, and they have no advantage, then I think we can work out a truce.
Don't be absurd, said Uncle Poot. You weren't here for the last war. There'll be no truce.
I don't expect it to hold, said Danny.
Where's my father?
Thor answered,
in town. Your mother and your brother and sister, too.
A family outing, said Danny. How sweet. I'll come back for them. The place we're going to belongs to a good friend of mine. My friend, do you understand me? Everyone there is my friend, but it's Stone's house, and in that place, he rules.
At that moment, Zog rejoined the group, even angrier than before.
You filthy little Drekka, I'm not going to...
This time, Danny gated him to the parking lot of the Lexington Walmart.
He's horrible, Danny, said Aunt Lummy, but you can't leave him out. They'll kill him. They hate him most of all.
I'm not going to leave him out, said Danny. I just don't have time to deal with his assholery. I'll gate him through and you can all tame him. Danny made a public gate, a big one.
Before you step through this gate, he said to everybody, you look me in the eye and tell me that you'll obey Stone and harm no one.
That'll take too much time, said Uncle Mook.
Look me in the eye and say yes, said Danny. Because if you don't keep your word, I will be ruthless. Do you understand me?
They all said yes as they passed through the gate. Danny followed and took back the gate behind him. Stone's cabin was too small for everyone to sleep there, and it was bitterly cold on this November night, but it wouldn't matter. They wouldn't be there long. Danny ignored everybody's questions and headed for the narrow isthmus between two jewel-like lakes. No rope this time. He began turning around and around. Immediately he spun out gates, his own gates, not the ones Loki had given him, and definitely not the captive gates. He took his time and wove it strong and true. By himself, Danny would have had no idea how to build it so it wouldn't lead to the same circle of stones on Westall where his previous two great gates had led. But Loki had known many good places on Westall for a great gate to lead. Ancient places, secret places that only Loki knew. So at Danny's urging, the gates that Loki had given him used their kinetic memory to guide him as he threw the thick woven gates upward. He felt the approval of Loki's outself. A 10,000-year gate, they told him. Danny wasn't sure he was thrilled to know that the gate would outlast him by hundreds of lifetimes, but it meant that it was well made, and it would do the job. Then he wove another gate, just as strong, leading back to a spot on the other side of the cabin. Stone, said Danny, you and Vivi first.
We've already been through a great gate, said Vivi.
Not this one, said Danny. So go and come back again. Vivi can show you the return entrance,
And Vivi, I need you there to shepherd everybody through. And so you can lock the gate if somebody on Westall tries to interfere or use the thing. And if Loki shows up, explain it to him. Though maybe he knows. Maybe he knows whatever his gates know. Danny could feel that the Greeks had stopped going through the wild gate. They're done, he said. That means they're coming. Hermia knows where this gate is. She may try to interfere. I have to concentrate on watching for her and protecting this place. So when you get back, Stone, you're in charge of this end. With that, Danny went off by himself into the cabin, up into the loft. The two Westillian boys went up the ladder after him. You can watch, said Danny, but do not speak to me. Not that the older boy needed the warning. And if the younger boy was really a gate mage, maybe he'd be able to follow what Danny was doing. Danny looked for Hermia, though not with his eyes. She was easy to find. She only had a few divisions of her outself, her ba. But since her passage through the wild gate, she glowed so brightly that she could not escape his notice. She was trying to lock the wild gate. Fool, thought Danny. The time to lock it was before you sent your entire family through it. Danny began unweaving his own gates from the wild gate. He knew what would happen. The former captives would remain, and he would no longer be able to feel when people passed through it. But it would be a far weaker great gate without his ba woven through it. And the return gate was entirely his. That one he simply took back. There was no return now, if anyone used the wild gate. Hermia would know what he was doing. Let her watch. He had thought of doing this while they were still passing through the wild gate, but he didn't know what half-unweaving the outbound gate would do to anyone using it at the time. Danny wasn't prepared to do murder, and for all he knew, that's what it would be. As for the return gate, yes, he could have closed that at any time, removed it and brought it back. But that would have left Illyrian mages on Westall, stranded and angry, and far more powerful than any mages on Westall. It would be irresponsible to send such an affliction to the other world. Better to let them all come back here and then weaken the outbound gate and close off the return permanently. Hermia was angry, no doubt, poor dear. What did you think would happen? Did you think I'd be understanding? That I'd do nothing? Yes, angry indeed. For now he felt her trying to take hold of the end of the outbound gate that the Norths were all passing through. Danny didn't even bother fighting her. He could have overpowered her easily. But then he would have had to do it again and again, whenever she felt like making another try. So he took her gates. As a lock friend, she had only three divisions of her outself. But she had to send them out in order to manipulate his gate. Without passing through a great gate, she would never have had power to reach this far. But now two of her three gates were here trying to move his great gate. Danny ate them. Then he followed them back to her gate hoard and ate the last one, too. All three now, everything she had, was inside his heart hoard. He could feel their terror. But no anger. Hermia was not angry. She was afraid, but she knew she deserved this. She knew that he could easily kill her, gate her to the bottom of the ocean and have done with her. Her treachery deserved no less. It had been the opening salvo in a war she could not win. But he wouldn't kill her. She must have known that about him, though clearly he did not know her at all. However, she would understand that rendering her blind and crippled to gates was actually a mild punishment compared to the rules of war. Now he would not have to stay awake waiting for her next move. Indeed, this attempt to move his new great gate might have been intended as an offering. She must have known he would detect the attempt and block it. She was giving him the chance to punish her in this lesser way. Still terrible, but there was always the chance he might give her gates back to her. The chance, perhaps. But he could not think what she might say or do to win back his trust. There were nowhere near as many Norths as there were Illyrians. They were already done, and all the orphans, too. I want you to go through the great gate, too, said Danny. And come right back. This is a better gate. It will make you stronger than you are. Will you do that? Yes, said Inup. Who was it that you ate up? A friend who betrayed me, said Danny. But you didn't gate her anywhere, said Inop. Wad gates people places. He kept me in prison for more than a year.
I'm not Wad, said Danny. I'm a different man, and I use my magery a different way.
Are you a weakling? Asked Inop. Aliuic thinks you are weak to be afraid to hurt people.
When someone is dead, I can't bring them back, said Danny. And if I hurt them too terribly, I can never win their trust.
Weak, said Inop. That's what Aliuic says.
When he takes back his own body and speaks for himself, I'll take notice of what he says, said Danny. Meanwhile, are you willing to go through the gate and come back?
Yes, said Inop.
And Aliuic nodded.
Danny gated them down to the isthmus where the outbound gate was. Stone would send them through.
Then Danny gated himself to Lexington and found Zog. He was still full of rage, but he spoke politely, fawningly.
The Lord Danny has subdued this vile old bird, said Zog. I know who holds the power here.
There is to be no violence at the place where I've made the great gate, said Danny coldly. My friend Stone owns the house. You will obey him while you're there, or I'll make you pay.
I understand the Lord Danny's mercy.
I am Loki to you, said Danny.
Zog looked stricken.
You would use that vile name?
I have met the Loki who took the gates. He acted with wisdom and courage, and I share his purpose. It's a far higher purpose and far more terrible war than any you have ever fought.
What do you know of war? Asked Zog contemptuously.
I know that you lost everyone you fought in, said Danny. I know that by obeying me and treating me with respect, you will earn the right to have your powers greatly increased. You've already had all your body's pains and weaknesses healed, haven't you?
Zog nodded.
That was a gift I gave you, even as I gated you away so you didn't waste my time with your petty hatred.
The Lord Loki is generous, he said Loki as if he were spitting out a cockroach.
Danny gated him to Maine. He found his parents in the upstairs room of a sandwich restaurant in a fine old house. With them were their children from their first marriages, father's son Pippo, 9 years older than Danny, and mother's daughter Leonora, who had just turned 20. Pippo's mother and Leonora's father had both been killed in the last war, but it wouldn't have made any difference. Once it was decided to let father and mother mate in order to try to make Danny, the old marriages wouldn't have mattered. Families made their decisions, and people obeyed. Even the heads of the families obeyed. Mother looked happy to see him. It was her first response, and it touched him a little. Father, however, knew that he would not be there if there were not something terribly wrong, so his response was dread. Dread, but not fear of Danny himself. They knew him well enough not to fear that he was there to attack them. As for Pippo and Leonora, they had never been awful to him, but they had also never protected or helped him in any way. They were nothing to him, and he was nothing to them. But that meant they had a better relationship than the one Danny had with most of the family. Danny sat beside them and crisply told them what they needed to know. I'll pay the bill, he said, and then gated them to Maine. When the waiter came back, Danny asked for the check. There was no reason for a drowther waiter to have a bad night just because the gods were starting a war. With the bill paid and a good tip given, Danny went outside, stepped into the gap between two buildings, and gated himself away. Family by family, he spent that night going through the world, gating everyone to Maine, leaving them for Stone and Vivi to guide them through the gates, and then going on to the next family. The land around the cabin was getting crowded and people were cold, though a couple of fire mages had warmed the house and wind mages were keeping the air still. At one point, Father tried to talk to him. Danny interrupted him. Stone keeps a pickup truck on the other side of the lake, he said. Now that you've been to Westall, see what you and Mother can do with the machinery and electronics. With all the families fairly evenly balanced and the Norths outnumbered, the only possible advantage is your abilities with machines. Drowther machinery. Who knows how you might be able to use it now? Father nodded.
Does this mean you're with us now? He asked.
No, said Danny.
But if you have any brains, you'll forget about this Loki and set out trying to create an alliance with the orphan mages.
There aren't enough Norths to fight this war, and they too will have to survive in a world dominated once again by powerful gods.
That's wise counsel, said Father.
No, Father, said Danny. It's a demand. I'm going out now to find all the orphans I can and bring them back. Stone has to go with me because I don't know who and where they are. So I'm setting you to greet them and send them through the great gate. Thor can prepare defenses if they come against us after all. I'm beginning to think Hermia didn't tell them where I made this gate, but I might be wrong. Use this opportunity to treat them decently and as equals. That means keep Zog and Gish away from them.
Father nodded. Your plan is a good one. I see that it's our best chance to survive the coming war. I will bring all the orphans into our family and...
No, said Danny. They are not to be adopted. They are not to be put under your authority.
You're going to have to do something much harder. Treat them as allies, as equals. Let them agree to accept North leadership in battle, but not North hegemony. Is that clear? They remain independent.
I didn't mean to rule over them, Father protested. I assumed they would want...
Assume nothing, said Danny. Treat them as equals. Now I have work to do.
Will you ever stop hating us? Asked Father. At this moment, I hate nobody except one, and he's not a North.
Who is it? That Greek girl?
It's the dragon. Set. You haven't heard of him.
Father looked blank.
That's the war that matters. This thing among you gods, it will be terrible, and I'm afraid of how you'll make the Drowthers suffer with all your arrogance. But I have to find Set and figure out a way to keep both worlds safe from him, and even Loki doesn't know how to do that.
Zog said that we have to call you Loki now, said Father.
No, Zog has to call me Loki. I'm Danny North to everyone else. Loki still means the gate thief, though he uses another name on Westall.
I thought the gate thief was the enemy of all gate mages.
We all thought that, but it isn't true. The gate thief has kept Westall safe for centuries, and by closing all the gates he has sharply limited the power of Set here in Middlegard. But now there are great gates again, and the danger is terrible, and all of your magery is useless against him. Now get to work, please, Odin, and send Stone to me. I wish you well with your war.
Father went away.
Stone joined him, and together they spent the entire day going to every orphan that Stone knew, or knew about. A dozen or so refused to go with them. 20 of them agreed to go to Westall and back, but insisted that they would then go home and fend for themselves. The rest, though, agreed to try at least to work with the Norths, to train with them, to cooperate if it really came to war with the Greeks. None of the other families even considered allying with the Norths. But they all kept the truce while they were at Stone's cabin. Then Danny gated them all back to their homelands to prepare for war. They knew that war would come. And by the time he had met them all, Danny had lost all hope that it might be avoided. They would all bide their time while they mastered their greatly increased powers. But the espionage would start at once, and the collisions would follow, sooner rather than later. They would escalate into combat. People would die. When Danny and Stone returned to the cabin, it was late afternoon. The day had warmed up a little. Danny saw that Father was making an effort. He and Mother were talking with several of the orphans, and others were paired up with Norths, practicing magery in some rather spectacular ways. The waters of one lake were churning. Large stones were falling from a nearby cliff, then stopping and sliding back up to resume their place. There were whirlwinds underfoot. But everyone was being careful and polite. Zog and Gish were nowhere to be seen. Danny found Thor.
How many of your informants are Mither mages? Asked Danny.
All the ones who are mages you've already brought here. The others are Drowthers.
Is there any chance of the family surviving this war? Asked Danny.
Oh, a very good one, said Thor. If we have the greatest gate father in history fighting beside us.
Don't count on it, said Danny.
Well, then, our chances aren't so good, said Thor.
See what Father and Mother can do with the machinery of war, said Danny.
Thor seemed puzzled. Tanks and fighter planes, Thor, said Danny.
I don't think any other mages know how to deal with them. What Father can do with machines, what Mother can do with electricity, that's where you put your money, Thor. The Norths get there first, and if you play it right, the others won't have any hope of catching up. Thor grinned.
You care about us after all, he said.
You're my damn family, said Danny. Even if you never made me glad of it for a moment. Danny turned away.
What will you be doing, Danny?
I'm creating a public gate to take you back to the farm. But it's a one-way gate. Once you leave here, you aren't coming back. At least not by gate. There will be no gates leading to this great gate. But for anyone who tries to come here without my permission, there will be plenty of gates. They just won't go to desirable places. Understand?
Danny, do you know what war means? Asked Thor. Do you understand that someday you're going to have to kill somebody?
I've had a man killed before, said Danny. And I've seen death.
When? Asked Thor.
I've had a busy time since I ran away from home.
He paused. Here's the gate back to the compound. Get people back there before they eat up everything Stone has.
Then Danny went back to Buena Vista. He had missed the whole day of school. He was exhausted. But he had to make sure that Hermia, who knew all his friends, was not arranging some kind of mischief. The Mither Mages could take care of themselves now that they had passed through a great gate. But Danny's friends would be easy targets for his enemies. So far they were safe. He had checked on them several times through the night and day just passed. Now, though, Danny had to sleep. He would be safer if he slept here at the cabin, and the great gate would be better protected. But if Danny was in Buena Vista, alone, then any attack would probably come against him personally. That's what he wanted. He could take care of himself. He wasn't going to let anything happen to Pat, or any of them.
Chapter 20. Worries.
In so many ways, the boy is the opposite of me, said Wad.
Anonoe was brushing her hair in front of the mirror.
You mean he's tall? Or he's a terrible lover?
Taller than I am, said Wad. But we may never know what kind of lover he'd be, since he seems grimly determined never to give or get pleasure of that kind.
You're spying on him?
Yes, said Wad. I could hardly believe he didn't realize that by giving him my gates, which he already had, I was given a window into his mind. Well, his perceptions, anyway.
Taking advantage of an untrained child. Shame on you.
He even knows that he can use my gates to access my memories. Yet it seems not to have occurred to him that I can use those gates to access his present actions.
Maybe he has nothing to hide, said Anonoe.
Nobody has nothing to hide, said Wad.
Then he thought better of it.
No, I think you're right. This Danny North really is exactly what he seems.
Unlike Wad the kitchen boy, said Anonoe.
Equally unlike Anonoe, King Priard's drowther mistress, said Wad.
Man-mages have to hide what we can do, said Anonoe.
Fortunately, our magery makes it fairly easy to do. That's one of the main reasons for the drastic penalty. If you manage to recognize man-magery, you rarely get a second chance to strike.
Quite the contrary, said Wad. I think the death penalty for man-mages was created as an all-purpose excuse for murder.
I had strange compulsions whenever I was near him, so I knew he was a man-mage, so I killed him. I have strange compulsions when I'm near you, said Anonoe.
Those are normal compulsions, said Wad. Everybody has them.
But few would feel them toward you.
But you know what I am, said Wad. Godlike powers are such an aphrodisiac.
You're not half the mage you used to be.
Still mage enough to port you around from place to place, said Wad. What I'm wondering is, how much of my eagerness to serve you in this way comes from my natural generosity, and how much from the arcane influence of your magery?
Anonoe paused in mid-stroke. Now, we've had this conversation before, and we agreed that it's circular. No matter what you desire or think, you can always say, I wonder why she's making me feel this desire, or this revulsion, or this compulsion, or whatever comes to mind.
It's in the nature of circular arguments that you can never quite escape them. You didn't have to charm me into helping you seek vengeance on Bexoy. I have reasons enough of my own.
And don't forget your powerful guilt over imprisoning me and my sons, said Anonue.
I know that didn't come from you, said Wad. I felt it long before you knew who your captor was.
Even if I had known, my abilities at that time depended on being present with the person I was influencing.
And now that you've been through a great gate?
I can divide my outself, rather the way you can. Perhaps I always could and didn't know it. But now I can leave a bit of myself inside my clients to keep my influence fresh and strong, and to see what they're experiencing.
Sounds distracting. I actually have to pay close attention to see what's going on with Danny North.
You're not a man-mage, said Anonoe. They all float in the back of my mind. Or rather, the back of my mind floats in them.
And have you given me a piece of your mind? Asked Wad.
If I had, would I tell you? Asked Anonoe.
It depends on your motive, said Wad. What if you're so devoted to my happiness and well-being that you leave a bit of your baw inside me so you can be sure that everything you do pleases me? Anonoe got up from her chair and went to the window.
Why shouldn't I use my abilities while I'm making love?
I'm not suggesting that there's anything wrong with it, said Wad. But you are far, far too aware of exactly what pleases me from moment to moment for me to believe that you're not using your magery.
Am I hearing a complaint?
You're hearing a question, said Wad.
When the lovemaking is finished, my lovely one, how much of you remains inside me? More of you is inside me right now than there is of me inside you, she said.
Not a clear answer.
If I were the sort to spy on you, I would deny it and I would make you believe me. So what's the point of your asking?
Because I want to hear the words.
Anonoe sighed. I leave a bit of my ba in you exactly as I do in everyone else. It's hard not to. I care about you. I also need you and depend on you. It's important for me to know how you feel about me, what you want, what you fear.
Wad couldn't help but smile. Honesty, the cruelest deception of all.
You know that I'm not deceiving you.
Or you're using honesty while disguising the fact that you're making me take such delight in it.
Will you send me to Kiel? Asked Anonoe. I have to deal with his fear of discovery. He thinks Bexoy has set spies on him.
Of course, said Wad. But tell me first. Have you ever placed your ba inside Queen Bexoy herself?
I've never been in her presence, said Anonoe. Both Priard and I saw to that. So no. I've seen her from a distance, but never close enough, in my pre-gating days, to get inside her devious mind.
So the one person it would be most useful to watch, you can't see.
But you can, said Anonoe, through your little spy gate.
That only shows me what she wants me to see, said Wad. I think she lives her entire life as if she expected me to be watching. She undresses and dresses as if she had an audience. She knows what I can do.
She has that kind of self-control? Every action is a performance all the time?
Absolutely, said Wad. She plays her roles every moment, waking and sleeping.
Sleeping?
Anonoe scoffed. I think even her dreams are lies that go along with the persona she's adopted. I think she believes her own lies as she tells them, and keeps on believing them.
If she believes them, are they lies? Asked Anonoe.
A question I once asked Pope Boniface IV, said Wad. He was busy converting all the pagan temples in Rome into Christian churches. I tried to explain to him how resentful the Greek and Roman families of mages were about such treatment, and he told me that the gods didn't exist. I considered myself proof of the contrary, and I showed him what I could do. I gated us both up into the Alps,